Dr. DeNoto.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent Bahamian people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, big up Baton, bro. Boy, I from Baton, bro. Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blank check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break, tell it grieve me. Boy, I doing the best I can, trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, big up Baton, bro. Boy, I from Baton, bro. Don't take no back talk, no bribe or no joke. If you find fire, you're definitely find smoke.
Baton,
bro. Boy, I from Baton, bro.
Good night, Bahamas. And welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9. And it's always a pleasure to be your host on this wonderful Friday. Telephone numbers tonight on Guardian Radio are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And you can text us, powered by BTC at 422-GR96. And you can listen, Guardian Crest 961. And like I said, it's always a pleasure to be a host and welcome to Inside Inner City. It's a community-based show. We talk a lot about politics because we know a lot about politics. We know a lot about religion. We know a lot about the prison. We know a lot about the gang culture, the abuse culture. We know a lot because we've had a lot of experience. But many of the guests that comes on the show and many of the callers who call on the show basically, you know, experience the same thing. You know, it's just that we never had a show that actually talk about the lives, you know, and what is actually happening inside the country and how we can find solution, but also have a dialogue so that we can understand the problem. It's not to talk no one specifically unless you're doing something that is not beneficial to the country. And we like to expose that for that instance, but to say attack an individual or a company, no. For that instance, if you're doing something wrong that is not beneficial to the country, I would speak on it the best of my ability to try and put some understanding so that maybe some way, somehow you would listen and try to correct what it is that you're doing, part of your organization, instead on the right track to contribute better to the country. So yes, this is a show dedicated to having topics that, you know, we talk about real life. And one of those topics, like, we would be basically talked about over the years is what we're seeing now. Dr. Minnis just presented former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram in his book. And, you know, a few years ago on the show, I was talking about the dysfunction between two former prime ministers. One was his mentor. One was the mentor who actually groomed one to become the prime minister. And then we saw where, you know, he got the position and then switched on his mentor. And no one was really discussing it, but on the show we said that, you know, it was like someone stabbing you in the back, and they did not speak about it publicly, but you could see between the former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram and former Prime Minister Hubert Minnis, you know, they didn't see eye to eye. You know, I said it on the show and I explained it, but you know, there was no record besides former Prime Minister Perry Christie coming out and saying that them two don't speak, but we see where the book was presented to Ingram from former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Menes. You could see where they had a little talk, but like we said, it is what it is. And they were saying that they don't have no problem with one another. But if you listen to the interview that's coming up, you'd see there's a problem. I don't know if they settled their problems, but this is basically what is causing the dysfunction in the Free National Movement as we speak now. There are factions that don't like one another trying to assume power, you know, and that's all about politics. It's about assuming power. Everyone wants to be the prime minister, you know. And then, you know, some wants to be ministers, and when they get that minister post, if that minister post is not a powerful position where they can do what they want, you know, they ready to rebel, you know, whether in opposition or in government. We just saw that recently, you know, with the Progressive Liberal Party. We saw it with Shane Gibson, Granite, Chairman Honorable Fred Mitchell. But we seem to see over the last few weeks that it seems to have dissolved. Now, that malice now seems to go into the Free National Movement. We want to have a discussion on that. But before we have that discussion, I just want to talk about one or two things that's going around the country that really is concerning to the Bahamian public. And one of those topics we want to talk about, the government's desire to spend $98 million to repair 50 miles of roads in Nassau. Well, I totally agree with the government concerning about fixing the road, because it's been a hazard to many Bahamians, thousands of road users over the years. In fact, after the Free National Movement started the road work program under the Hubert Alexander Ingram administration, he paved basically the main roads, East Street, Blue Hill Road, and all those main roads. But in the last, after him getting voted out, we have yet to see the roadway continue. It's being patch up here. But through the inner city communities and all around and Fox Hill and even the Eastern Road, you know, we talk about the rich people, you know, they get money and et cetera, and they could do this and do that. But even them, you know, their road is terrible out east. I don't even talk about out west, you know. So the government's plan to do the 98 to repair 50 miles of roads in Nassau is really, really a wonderful thing, because, you know, a lot of people have the car tires damaged, you know, with the potholes, you know, the asphalt is lifting up out of the road, you know, it's causing people the CV joints, you know, transmission problem, you know, and we don't sue the government. And the thing is, you know, we are paying a high VAT, you know, and we are paying high taxes in the country, so we deserve the best. So, you know, and automatically this $98 million it's coming from the taxpayers, you know. This still is coming from us now. So we're paying for all these things. So we need the best royal treatment that we can get from our government. They are not doing us no favor. The only thing is they have to make it a mandate to keep the roads maintained. You know, $98 million is a lot of money, you know, to do 50 miles of road in Nassau. You understand? But it's needed. But if we had a maintenance program year-round where we could see what the obstruction is, on the streets in Nassau, problems where we have the road work team riding through and they see a problem, they diagnose the problem, you know, they come up with a budget and they're able to carry it back to the department, and in a short period of time, they would solve that problem instead of waiting years and years and they keep on corroding and getting worse, and it's going to be more expensive. So we need maintenance, you know. Fixing the road is one thing, but maintenance is the most important thing, because, you know, like I said, if you look at the QE Sports Center, you know, that was built by the Chinese. You know, it took a long time to build. It was a beautiful stadium. But if you watch over the years, it has completely decayed. Now, why would you build an infrastructure, right? Freely was built. And it was hosting one of the best world relays in the world. And we let it run down. Under about 10 years. That don't make no sense. We supposed to have a maintenance program at the stadium to look at all the rust and the damages and cracks and have a maintenance team there on a daily basis, and they're fixing the problem so that it wouldn't corrode the way it corroded. Negligence is the reason why many of our government buildings are in the condition they are today, and many have to be demolished because of the maintenance. You know, if you look at the Clarence A. Bean building that has been demolished, then if you look at some other buildings around the country, you know, they're $1 million structures. Now government has to rent offices, which is going to run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Man, we had our own building, but we failed to have a maintenance team in place. So, yes, I think that's real good. The MP is Mr. Minister of Works, Clay Sweden. So I applaud the government for going ahead with this plan. I think it's going to take, let me see what it's going to say. Clay Sweden, Minister of Works, Family Island Affairs, said Bahamas Hot Mix will be the main contractor for the 98 million program, which aims to improve the 55 communities on roads in New Providence on the Family Island. The New Providence portion of the program will cost roughly $91 million, and the rest is probably Family Island. And the work is scheduled to happen within 2.5 years. Sidewalk construction costs $3 million, and drainage work costs about $4 million. You know, some $2 million has also, let me go to page 4. $2 million being budgeted to address flooding issues in the Oswell and Bay Street areas. Yes, because you know we've seen it on Facebook and the news where the water, you know, just a brief rain and it's completely flooded. The ministry recognized that asphalt surfaces degrade over time due to weather, heavy traffic, aging, leading up to cracks, potholes, and safety risks. And Mr. Sweden said during the office at the Prime Minister, he wants to address the asphalt mudding and paving program to replace old asphalt with new durable materials. You know, and that's what we need. You know, we need to come up with solutions, you know, instead of keep on using the asphalt when, you know, after a certain amount of time, it gets damaged. But also, I said, these roads need to be maintained. You know, we have the Ministry of Works, right? Is this team going around on a daily basis and assessing the problems, the potholes in Nassau, New Providence? And are they repairing them in a timely fashion? Last but least, I want to also say this. BPL right now, it's getting around the rainy, we having bad weather. You know, in Jamaica, you know, before the hurricanes, they would go and trim the trees, you know, that are close to the power lines. And Nassau is saying BPL now is doing that. And also, you know, when they cut them down now, I see that they remove the trash, you know, because some time ago, I was studying BPL, you know, and they were cutting down the trees, and they were just leaving the trees on the side of the road and not removing them. But now I want to give a thumbs up, because now when they cut the trees from around the lines and around the poles, they now come back and remove the debris, which is what you're supposed to do. You know, you just can't go and cut the trees and then leave the debris right there. It's wrong, you know. And you have the equipment to actually remove the debris. And I want to keep on encouraging the BPL to go around, you know, because they have to go on Fox Hill, you know, Camp Road, and places where trees are in the power line, you know. And what we don't know is that These trees interfere with the power line and causes blackout and causes the transformers to blow. So many of you who live in houses or around in the community that sees the tree limbs pushing through the lines or close to the line, call BPL so that they can cut the lines because, you know, when heavy rain comes, you know, we had a lot of blackouts around the country. And this is one of the main reasons why we have these blackouts. So report the matter because that's why you see the line sometimes spark, you know, because that's be the tree is hitting the negative and positive lines together. And this has caused the transformer to blow and have power shorted. So report these incidents to BPL.
Yeah.
All right. Also want to talk real quick before I start the show. Lena and Bombers did their Christmas giveaway today. They ride around in the Grunstown community. They have been doing it for the last 5 years. I want to congratulate all those who support Lena Hahn. That you're doing a wonderful job in making a lot of kids in the community very happy. I also want to give a shout out to the Fox Foundation for doing an extremely great job. Between the Fox Foundation, Lena Hahn Foundation, and many other private entities that are doing and giving back to the general public, I want to congratulate each and every one of you for being there for the less fortunate and to put a smile on each and every one of those kids' faces who received their free Christmas gift from donors around the world. So thanks to Lennon Bahamas and the Fox Foundation. Now we're going to begin our show. Yeah, like I was saying, Ali, we can play the first clip real quick so we can... Okay, we just want to play this real quick. We could get it. Two former prime ministers. One helped one to become a minister and then next prime minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And then, like, someone stopped someone in the back, but they were denying it. But I just want to say that some things we speak on the radio that are invisible are actually true. So time tells, you know. Go ahead.
Two former prime ministers who are said to be at odds, breaking their long-awaited silence tonight, making it clear where they stand. This as the party that they're both members of has reportedly been grappling with some internal issues. Arlington Richie Jr. spoke with both former prime ministers earlier today. He joins me live in studio.
Good evening, Janaea. Former leaders of the country, Dr. Hubert Minnis and Hubert Ingram, addressing their strained relationship to the public today as Dr. Minnis presented his very first memoir to Ingram. Over the years, there have been a number of questions regarding their professional and personal relationships with former Prime Minister Perry Christie, once insinuating that the two don't even speak to each other. Eyewitness News spoke to both men today who wanted to clear the air with Ingram, reminiscing on the first time Minnis made a major impression on him.
I helped to recruit him. I wanted to get him earlier, but I didn't get him until 2007. Mm-hmm. When my second sent into office, and he proved to be a good MP, and he moved up in the party.
Former Prime Minister Hubert Ingram reflects on the time he knew the former Prime Minister Hubert Minnis would be of significance to the FNM. The Killarney PM paying a courtesy call to Ingram, delivering a copy of his book, The Power of Determination. In their past, there have been claims that the relationship between the two former PMs was strained. This after Minnis declared following the 2012 that the Ingram era is over. This after Ingram resigned following the FNM's crushing defeat at the polls. Ingram, however, denied today that their relationship has been problematic.
I had a bit of lucky. I never had a lucky relationship with Minnis. After Minnis became prime minister, he distanced himself from this. He was very close to me. Very close to me. Not together often, but after he became Prime Minister, he was a difficult man altogether, as far as that is concerned. Right? Mm. But I never lost my respect for him.
Mm-hmm. Minnis, however, expressed that some separation might have been necessary to chart his own course for leadership within the party.
But there comes a point in time, especially when you have certain positions, you try your best to carve a direction for you. But if you find yourself in challenges, problems, then of course you always return to your mentor or the more knowledgeable one.
As for the reported current internal fighting within the party, this following call by the former deputy leader, Desmond Bannister, for leader Michael Pintard to call a convention, Ingram doesn't find it to be necessary at this time. He shared why.
I don't believe that there's a call for a convention. I think that there's a leadership challenge they want to launch against Mr. Pintard's leadership, and they are cloaking it in this thing called convention. Mr. Pintard, his leadership, will make a decision at some point in time as to when a convention should be held. A convention should be held when they have some reason and purpose to have it, not because there are some rebels within the party who want to have a convention. It's a very expensive exercise.
Yeah, and remember, we gave you the inside stuff on Inside Inner City a few years ago, you know, and we talked about this. And, you know, when you help somebody, you got to be very careful. You understand? Because some people could just be smiling in your face and, you know, they know that you're in a position to help them. And they would put a smile on your face just for you to feel like they like you or they respect you. And at the same time, they don't have no respect for you and they don't like you. And that's why you got to be careful, you know, who around you, you know. My friends are people who live outside my community. I have a few friends in the area, in the community. But I say, to keep people close to me. I have had too much bad experience. So I've learned to still help people, continue to be productive, but I've also learned to separate myself, and I've learned to, I've been able to accomplish more. And I just was talking about this to just to explain to you that sometimes you have good intentions for people, but that don't mean you must stop helping people. It's just that, you know, you got to be very careful on how you help people and what you're going to let them know about you. You understand? And don't put too much power in their hands at one time, because it could be detrimental to you in the future. And even though former Prime Minister Hubert Ingram is saying that, you know, there's no malice between them two, well, if you listen, you could hear both of them saying that, you know, when him and Menace was tight, you know, when he recruited him and made him a member of the Free National Movement, right, and make him a minister, and then when he stepped down from being opposition leader and give the ram to Menace because he really believed in him, you know, the man get up and say the Ingram era is over. Now, that to me is one of the most disrespectful thing that I ever see happen to someone who helped lift you and helped build you. You know, the most disrespectful thing I ever saw too is, you know, when Ingram to get in power and how he was disrespectful to the late great Sir Lyndon Oscar Pilden, you know, when they were going to Parliament and how they were saying things to him and he was walking, going to Parliament as the opposition leader, you know, after he lost the election. And then, you know, Ingram was a student of Sir Lyndon Pilden. So what goes around comes around. It comes right back around to Ingram again. So that's why you got to be careful what you do to people, because it comes right back around to you. You understand? So I like to give these examples so I could help and change the mindset of many of you who will be listening. You know, I'm not perfect, but I've had a life of doing a lot of wrong, but I've also become a person now, understand that how to correct those and give some advice to those who might took the part earlier, and some advice from someone who has wisdom and wants to help improve his country mindset of the citizens. Yeah, you know, and Menace got the opposition position, and which was given him from basically former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram, because he would have never ever become an opposition leader, because you know that's when the rebel, the infighting was going on with Loretta Roll and what do you name now, Senator Rodney Mungar and all the rebel thingam, you know? So all that was like running that same timing. So yes, you know, and what goes around comes around. You know, Ingram did it to Sir Lyndon, but probably Sir Lyndon did it to Ingram when he was the prime minister, because he booted both Perry Christie, who became prime minister as well, and Ingram out the party, and they became independent members. So they hold grudge, and when they got their position to do vengeance, they did it with surgical, you know, surgery. And you just got to be careful when you get power and who you give it to. You know, now you're seeing them too saying it ain't what it is, but you know that right now there's infighting, and Menace understands the power that the former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram has in the party. Even though Menace was just recently leader of the Free National Movement, but he understands that Ingram is deep and powerful, and if he want to reconcile and try to, according to what's going on, it seems like, you know, they want to oust opposition leader Michael Pintard, you know, and probably Menace feel, you know, he had his one shot and that he deserve a second chance, and he feel that Michael Pintard is not up to the task. He is not a fan favorite with the Bahamian people. You know, he don't stand a chance going to the next general election against, you know, the Honorable Brave Davis and Deputy Prime Minister Chester Cooper, you know. And he feels, you know, and that's what I'm speculating, because, you know, you listen to Ingram, he's saying, you know, there are certain people who wants to, you know, to remove Michael Pintard. So who do you think is going to be the one to be put in position? It has to be Minister Musi. He's trying to make a bounce back. Well, good luck to the Free National Movement, because, like I say, you know, I have nothing personally against former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Menace, but we were treated like seventh class citizens in our country. We were held prisoners in our country. You know, we basically, you know, were left on our own, you know, and for a person who was the authority and the power to make things more easier for Bahamians during the pandemic, and his governance with his party at that time, it's not the same party, you know, that government is gone, you know, but it was devastating to thousands of Bahamians in this country, and many of us, you know, we don't hate him, we just don't hear from him no more. You know, we don't want to hear his name calling. I mean, honestly speaking, people on the streets don't even like to hear his name, honestly speaking. They don't remember him as even being the prime minister, because they felt the punishment he inflicted on the Bahamian people was very devastating to a lot of us, especially the poor. You know, the rich were able to survive because, you know, they had the money and they had businesses and they owned gas stations, so fuel and, you know, gas and et cetera, they were able to manage. But for 200,000 plus people who were impoverished, you know, it was like a living hell. And then we had the authorities, you know, the police on us, where we couldn't even walk to go get a plate of food from a family member, where you couldn't even walk the streets or go to the streets for water or go to the grocery store, you know. It was crazy, you know. And we remember that. And if that's the case, if the party feels that they want a new leader, I don't see nothing wrong with Michael Pintard, because to tell you the truth, I'm no fan of the Progressive Liberal Party, Brave Davis, but if you ask me how he is governing, I mean, to tell you the truth, the poor are still suffering, the Bahamian people, you still got to go to work, you know. You know, it's just being regular. I wouldn't say you're governing bad, I wouldn't say you're governing good. You know, it's just neutral, you know. It's okay. You know, a lot of people's lives have not really improved, but at least, you know, we're not locked on. We, you know, it looks to be a good 2024. Hopefully, where a lot of new business ventures and business owners and a lot of opportunities as far as being employed as workers should, based on the budget that was passed in Parliament a few months ago, I think, you know, we looking for a little brighter money, monetary-wise, next year. But, you know, like I say, Ravis governing so-so. Could really improve, you know, if they do these things with the road, the housing, small business, see if they can make a few millionaires around the country and around the family island, you know, and create some more opportunities as far as employment for the 5,000 plus students coming to the school basically every year. So like I say, you know, I'm no fun. My bravest, I'd give him a, let's see, Chester Cooper, staying phenomenal, you know, for his community. Both Brave and Chester Cooper doing, I give them A for his community development in their respective community. Cat Island and Chester Cooper, Exuma, they're going to be booming for the next 25 years, 30 years with all investment. So they get an A on that. As governing the country, I'd give them a C because they're still leaving a lot of people out. I hope that going into the next year, they decide to focus more on the Bahamian people. Okay? All right. Where's now? So like I say, I could read between the line with Menace and Ingram. And I all said it on the show. Now it come to light. And you hear all the evidence. They don't like one another. And they still don't like one another. But they have to get along, even though they don't like one another, because there's a party structure, both of our former leaders. Menace needs Ingram. You understand? You know, because now, like I say, you hear what he said. Sometimes, you know, even though him and Ingram was cool, that when you become leader, you have to push people aside. So he pushed Ingram aside. Then he said that, you know, when things get tough, means governance, you go back. You ain't going back them around the pandemic. The man and former Prime Minister Perry Christie asked you to assist with the pandemic or with the hurricane. You refused them, but you won't go them now because, you know, if you want to make that return to being leader of the party on the out, this current opposition leader, Michael Pintard, you need the consent of former Prime Minister Ingram. See, I can picture the line, and I can tell you I'm telling the truth. Okay, we're finished with that. We're going to talk about we're going to talk about the UN report. You can play the second. You're going to play the second one. This is the Bada Bahamas Correctional Center. Acting Commissioner Dawn Clare speaking on the matter. I don't want to show you what this concern is about. Go ahead.
Eyewitness News having a one-on-one conversation with Acting Commissioner of the Bahamas Department of Corrections, Dawn Clare, following that blistering review of BDOCs by the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention. While Clare admits that improvements are needed at the facilities, here's what he says UN officials must keep in mind.
This facility was built in 1952. When the British built this facility, this place was not built for rehabilitation. or for persons that, you know, to change. This place was built for, purely for punishment. Now, we have inherited an institution again that has to change.
I'm standing just on the outside of the prison facilities, but several days ago, UN officials were on the inside where they got an up-close view of the conditions here that are said to be inhumane. Now, Clara is not shying away from those concerns, and he says he's fully aware.
Maximum security is overcrowded. You know, we cannot turn anybody away that the court sends here. But it's a fact that the cells in Maximum doesn't have toilets. They're still sloping.
UN officials also urging government to reinstate in-person family visits. The previous Minister-led administration brought that policy to a screeching halt during the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. And to this point, the Davis administration has yet to revisit that decision.
COVID is real. If there's an outbreak in this institution, where can we send them? I would like to see physical visits. But at this time, we cannot do it. So the majority of our visits will be through video visitation. And I think that is the best way to go at this time.
UN officials also expressing concerns with the reported lack of video visitations for inmates across the facilities. Claire says that could not be further from the truth.
The UN report says that there is no video visitation in the remand center. There is. I disagree with them saying that there's no video visitation in Maximum. There is. We have now installed over 35 systems in Maximum Security Prison and over 14 in the remand center.
What about medical care? UN officials raised that concern in the preliminary report, and quite frankly, they say inmates are not being given access. Well, to that, Claire sought to set the record straight.
We have on staff over 5 doctors. We just hired 2 additional ones, the psychiatrist and the psychologist. Inmates can't see the medical department. So too, I do disagree with that.
Now, down the road from BDOCS is the Sandilands Rehabilitation Center. Based on a number of reported factors, inmates with mental health challenges are not detained here, but are held at the Bahamas Department of Corrections. But that's a major issue for UN officials, given the conditions at BDOCS.
We are overwhelmed with the number of mentally ill patients here. This is not a place built, you know, currently for mentally ill inmates.
Members of the United Nations Working Group also slamming government for having remanded suspects and convicted criminals held together in the maximum security section. But Claire remains on the defense.
When you have the remand center that can only hold 300, and you have over 650 remanded persons, where else can we put them? We have no choice but to put them in maximum security prison.
Now, with all of those issues in mind, the acting commissioner is making one thing clear.
It doesn't matter what training we do, we need a new facility and we need new spacing. The American Correctional Association and the Canadians has designed a state-of-the-art facility for us. And hopefully very soon the government will be making an announcement as to when this facility will be constructed for us.
Jose Atia.
I want to say, if you're listening, you would hear that the prison was built in 1952, and you hear it was not built for rehabilitation. It was built for punishment. And you heard it was only meant to hold a certain amount of people, okay? You heard him say, remember I always said on the show that prison can't hold everyone who get charged with serious offenses. Based on the fact that we have 100 murders this year, and we had 100 murders last year. And then if we continue to have murders the previous year, we're going to have to make space for those charged. You know, the police charge them. They send them to court. The court send them to prison. And you hear Mr. Clare, who I highly respect, you know, I'm on board the Ministry of National Security Advisory Committee. Not paid, but I go and I sit and I give my opinion. And, you know, me and Mr. Clare and a few of us, we have this discussion. And he was speaking the truth. He's making good collaboration. And we're making plans and giving the government, the Ministry of National Security, ideas that we put together at the table. And then we pass it on to the minister. And these are some of the findings. And the government is working, you know, trying to correct and find solutions for the country's problem. And I'm there sitting on to the table, so I'm just trying to show you the problem we face and how all this adds up to basically, you saw the Facebook clip where two young men jump in the car. It was a double murder, but a triple shooting. And then, you know, we saw the young man them get back in the car. But if we look at the flick, we've been seeing that hundreds of times, you know, not on video, but same scenario, different people. But it's the same scenario, just different people. And my job was to come and explain that. And over the years, I was explaining all that based on prison, based on the family structure has been destroyed in the country with the drug pandemic and the rum epidemic back in the early 70s, 80s, and 90s, and we have never recovered. You know, we fought for independence and we inherited a British system that would be fought against, you know. Now, we are leaders as prime ministers and governor generals, but now we are pressing our own. And what has happened now is that we have become a system where instead of us uplifting one another the way we're supposed to uplift one another, we are actually fighting and destroying ourselves when we're supposed to be prospering, understanding where we came from. You know, we fought against the British, nonviolent, and we fought for our so-called independence. And once we received that, all those high positions that the British have, they told us that if we want independence, we're going to have to sign under a contract, whereas we become so-called independent, but the empire is still in charge, and we become a company or a colony, you call it. And we have yet still to understand what we are doing to ourselves. It has nothing to do with the white people, you know. It has to do everything about ourselves. So I respect Mr. Clair. And he also talked about the fact that Noriman has space for 300, right? But if other people are getting charged for other serious crime and the courts are sending the inmates to the prison cannot refuse the inmate. So that means now instead of this place built for 300, the space was for 300, now we have to cramp an extra 300 people in that portion of the prison. What you think is going to happen? Now, I'm not here to take up for persons who go to prison. You know, especially those who go to serious crime like rape and armed robbery and murder. Okay, there are some people who go to prison for small offenses. And you and Mr. Clair explaining that they have to mix them up. So even the hard and even the petty offense inmates will eventually be put with hardened inmates. So everyone is going to be hard. And I'm not taking up for nobody. You know, if you do something that is terrible, you should be punished. But I also want you to notice that 90% of those who go to prison will eventually come back out. And if they're not properly rehabilitated, we have seen over the last 30, 40 years that people who are institutionalized, that when they come back in society, they commit heinous crimes and they harm behemoth loved ones. That means you don't know who they're going to harm in the country, but only you could watch the news. You know, we had a little, maybe, you know, series of, you know, what we've seen on the news, you know, where we've seen little Marco Archer, little Bella, you know, and many others. You understand? And it normally relates to someone who comes out of prison. So, for me, I understand if you commit the crime, you do the time. But we have to make sure that in a society that we're supposed to be a Christian nation and a loving and kind nation, we also have to make sure that those who commit offenses have a chance to come back in society with a changed mindset and a remorseful mindset. And we have the proper tools to rehabilitate them to re-enter society, because what was happening now can't continue. We just saw where the Minister of National Security, Mr. Monroe, was saying that a young man who was released on bail a year ago, he requested to be remanded back in prison for his own safety. Reason why? Because he just was recently attacked and he most lost his life because, you know, OCHA is retaliation. You know, OCHA is death. You know, in prison, something might happen to you, but at least you're more safer. At least there's no guns in prison, you know. So he fell fair for his life, and he went to the court and he asked the magistrate to revoke his bail and send him to prison for his own safety. So that's how serious it is in our country. You understand? So that's why we do need a new prison. And we need creative programs that are going to change the mindset of those with small criminal offenses. And even some who are doing 15, 20 years, because eventually they're going to come out. That's why 90% of inmates in prison, whether they're charged with serious offenses, will come out eventually. But if we don't do nothing to change their mindset, and when they come back on the street, they're going to hurt our children. They're going to hurt our grandmothers, because they are animals. You understand? Up in the prison, based on what the commissioner is saying, acting commissioner, and what I basically know, and the many guys I know who come out of prison, who have served time in prison, I know many of them are monsters. They might look like human, but tell you they are monsters. You understand? Very dangerous, very aggressive, easy to agitate. Some can't count. You understand? Some don't have no trade. They just come out and they doing what they got to do to hustle. You know? So, yes. Okay. So, yes, we do need a new prison. And many would say, you know, you do the time, you spend the time. Every time you say that, just think about every time you look at the news and you see a guy charged for serious offense, he comes to the prison and he hurts a loved one in the country. So what you're saying is not making no sense, because they are doing the time and they're still coming out and hurting our loved ones. So what sense you're saying in you do the time, you spend the time? Yeah, they do their time, they spend the time, they come out and they kill and rape a kid or rape a woman or rape a young man or rape a old grandmother. It's because we don't see the effects of us understanding that if we don't repair the prison, and if we don't measure, and when I mean measure, that's how I look at it. If we have 1,700 young men in prison right now, and we keep this average up for the last 20 years, and we keep up 100 murders per year. If we don't see a decrease in how many people are in prison, so if we don't see the decrease from 1,700 and all these programs we're doing in the country, and then we don't see a drop, 1,700, and then a drop to like 1,000, then 900 and 800, that means we are doing what we're supposed to do at the prison. You understand? And then when we see a decrease in the 100 murders, when we see we could keep that to You know, it's 100. It's more than 100 now. And if we get, use our statistics and say, you know, we have 100 murders in the last 10 years. With these programs we run in, you know, rehabilitation going into the prison, the programs and the community centers that are being built in the inner city community, and the programs that we're introducing in the school to teach kids how to do business and how to make money and introduce trades in the school. And then we start to see a decrease in the murders per year. And we start to see like 80. Then we start to see 70. And then we start to see 60. Then we start to see 50. Then we start to see 40. Then the commissioner of police, then the government of the Bahamas can start to say that this is the result of the police and combination of community programs and all those who are giving back, the teachers and everyone. Then we can measure it. Tell Dan if we're having 100 murders, I don't care what the commissioner is saying on the news. It doesn't make no sense. I don't care what the Minister of National Security is saying. They're not making no sense. Unless we see the 1,700 inmates at the prison start to go down to 500, 400. Until we see the 100 murders that we have every year start to reduce to 50, 40, 30, then we're making progress. So it's very important that we understand it takes 20 years to get rid of this problem. So we have to have continuous programs, new prison, community centers built up. We have to be able to have trades in the school, have opportunities in the school where kids can learn many different trades. We have to find ways how we could introduce the tourism industry where we have 7.7 visitors come to our shores every year. But yet still, we have high unemployment in the country. We have to teach the kids on how they can benefit the craft market, the tourism industry, whether it's water sports, whether it's tour guides, whether it's fisheries or tour fisheries or whatever it is, because tourism has a lot of different business aspect. For many of our kids coming to the school can learn how to benefit from the 7.7 million visitors come to our shores so they could have what I call clientele and customers, because we have them. I look at the tourists as customers. I don't look at them as guests. I look at them as customers who bring resources and funds, credit card and cash to the Bahamas to spend. And we as citizens supposed to be able to benefit from that. So our 5,000 kids and those who are unemployed in the country shouldn't have to be looking for work, should not be out of work. We should be able to benefit greatly and then trickle down. And I think all of this can solve our problem that we face today. You understand? Because we bring the value back up again. You know, because we're benefiting directly. And this can change the complexity of the many problems we face in our country today. We have to be able to empower our people.
Okay. All right.
And prison is one of the first steps. We have to stop saying, you know, you do the crime, you spend the time. We don't see, they do the crime, they spend the time, and they come back out, and they do more serious crime, and they come back out. You understand? Let's give them an opportunity if they make a mistake. Now, some mistakes you can't really come back from. You understand? I'm really not too fond of people who rape. I'm not too fond of people who kill indiscriminately innocent people. I'm not too fond of people who rob. You understand? But in some cases, you know, they got to get rehabilitated because they will be coming back on the streets. But for many other crimes, we have to be able to rehabilitate many of our young men and our females in the country, because it's our responsibility and it becomes a problem. Okay, I want to talk about this. Where we are now? 7:27, I got 30 more minutes. So I want to talk about this. I'm talking a lot of stuff today. So I'm going to this next part of the show. We're going to talk about the justified killing rule and Adley's shooting case. This is the case that we discussed a year or two ago, where our Defense Force Officer Adley, I know him, and when I saw his picture, a few days ago in the newspaper, I know the young man personally. And, you know, he was killed in an incident where he was in a suspicious yard. You know, he was sitting down in his car. It's his car. The police, you know, probably was patrolling. They saw him in his car. It's probably a vacant lot. You know, probably the brakes light could be on. You could have been lighting a cigarette or something. You know, you see it in the light. So when the police must be riding through, a call was made, someone making some disturbing noise. They pulled up. And in fact, they said that he was on leave because, you know, he had some mental problems, you know. And it could be anywhere, you know, breaking up with your wife, your girlfriend. It could be money problem. Some people could be sick where they can't deal with the pressure of being sick. You know, a lot of people who you love and put trust in, you know, they turn their back on you. The one who you really love and care about, they turn their back on you and you can't take it. So some people have mental breakdown. In this case, it could be either one of those. But he on leave, you know, he sitting down in his car, two officers pulled up, you know, must he demand on him coming out of the car. He refused, you know. And first of all, let me say why he could have refused. I'm not saying that officers are wrong, but officers are really aggressive, you know, because, you know, that's just the way they are. And sometimes people who are going through mental health issues, they don't want to be bothered, you know. He probably just sitting on there, just didn't want no one to bother him. He just in his own world, and, you know, he could be talking out his head. Because my uncle is doing it. Many people do it with mental health problems, you know. And they just want to be bothered, you know. You know, coming there as a police officer, you could be demanding a person who don't want to be bothered. And he is no problem to nobody, you know. He's just in his space. And he don't want to be bothered. And he talking to himself, you know. The officer demanding to come out. And because he ain't coming out, the officer could be start being aggressive. Come on the car, you know, before I do this and that, you know. And then eventually they said he come on the car. And, you know, asked the officer was, must he told the officer he's a defense officer or whatever. And the officer was looking through his identification. He made the move to, according to the officer, to try and disarm the officer. In response, the officer used his service revolver and shot Defense Force officer dead, oddly dead. And the footage shows on their camera. And they searched the car. There was no drugs found. There was no firearm found. The coroner's court, seeing the footage, they said that it was justifiable, even though he was unarmed, even though he was in breaking the law, even though no complaint was made against him, even though he was a citizen of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas who had no warrant, you know. But they ruled it justifiable because he reached for the officer's gun. Again, I just like to say this. The ruling doesn't necessarily mean that they are not guilty, you know. They saying it's justifiable because he reached for the officer's service revolver. But is it justifiable to approach an innocent person and you have no probable cause? You have no probable cause for searching the young man in the car in the first place. What is your reason for searching him in this car, even though you said the yard is vacant? Of course, it was proven that after the shooting, you had searched the car, there was no drugs found, there was no firearm found. The excuse was that he made a move for the gun. There are certain things can be avoided. because we have a lot of mental health poisons in the country. And if you look at the United States of America, when people have mental health issues, the police approach them and stand from a distance and call for backup. And then have a team of people who comes in with shields, and they come in with what you call them? The taser, because they know the poison has a mental health issue. In some cases, the police in the States, they kill poisons who have mental health issues in the country. So it could have been one of those incidents where an officer was feel fair for his life. But at the same time, this is an innocent young man who lost his life, and the police them have been vindicated. You understand? And it's being classified as justifiable. Mr. Armstrong's father responded, and he said the same thing. His son was unarmed. There was no drugs found. You know, there was no complaint made against his son. But yet still, it's justifiable. For us, you wonder why these things happen. So let me just read this quick. I can't see too good, I got to get me some glasses next. You want to get a couple of dollars. I'm broke now. All right. The coroner's court jury ruled yesterday that police were justified in killing Royal Bahamas Defense Force leading Seaman Rodney Adley. Avenue on Dix. What did I say? Let me see. Sorry. On Dunmore Avenue on January 10, 2022. The finding came after 5 hours jury heard testimony and watched body camera footage that showed Adley lunging at an officer's during a search. The officer, let me go to page 4. The officer said he believed Adley was, longing for his gun. Adley's father, Rodney Adley Sr., was incensed by the justifiable homicide finding, telling the newspaper the shooting was unreasonable. This is the fourth time in 2023 that jurors returned a justifiable homicide ruling. There has also been one open verdict finding and 3 finding of homicide by manslaughter, including the highly publicized Azario Major and D'Angelo Irwin's case. At the time of his death, Adley Jr. was on administrative leave from the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. During the 3 days of testimony, Inspector Dion, Rodden, the system administrator of the police body cam, played footage of Corporal Rashad Pratt body cam, and Corporal Pratt, who was the subject of the suspect's approach, the deceased silver-colored Mazda Demo, which was parked suspiciously in a vacant lot in the dark of night. Now they're saying vacant lot in the dark of night. Now he's saying, what is the probable cause for you going to this car? Now this is the young gentleman car. Again, what is the probable cause? Because it was in a vacant yard, and because the yard is dark, but there was no criminal complaints being made. What is the reason for you pulling over Mr. Adley? Mr. Adley loses his life because he was in a place that the police believe suspicious. And because the police demand him to come with the car, and Mr. Adley was having his mental breakdown, and he didn't want no one to be around him, and he was away from everyone. For his safety and the safety of others, he was in his lot. But not knowing to him, His life was about to get taken from those who he is a part of the fraternity. You understand?
So, yes.
You know, his father, you know, said it was unreasonable. And like I said, you know, we're going to keep on having these problems in our country because we have 100 murders. And because the police are going to continue to be aggressive because we have 100 murders. Okay? Reason why the police are like that? Three men shot, two are dead. Because we keep on having this. Three men shot, two are dead. You see the footage where two young men were shot and one dead. I watched the footage just like everyone else, and you could see, like, this was an intended target. There were about three young men in the footage. And like I said, this is about the 100 or 200 footage. We were seeing the same thing. Not the same person, but we were seeing the same incident, like two or three guys coming, shooting two, three people. We didn't see that, you know. So this is nothing new. It's just that it's different persons who are pulling the trigger. A different set of young men just taking the same part. And I always tell you all, this is something that is passed on from individuals who think about harming others, who are in that gang world, who are in a violent world. You inherit a spirit of violence, and it backfires on you. Just as well, you're going to hurt somebody at first. You're going to shoot one or two people, or probably three or four. You might kill a couple of people. But one day, someone is going to kill you. And that's the bottom line, as long as you're involved in this kind of stuff. And that's just how it goes around. I talked with Woody earlier about what former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Ingram did, the former Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of Bahamas and Lyndon Pinlan Ben Ingram won in 92, and how he was very disrespectful to Sir Lyndon. And like I said, Sir Lyndon probably did it to Ingram when he was the Prime Minister of the country. You understand? So when Ingram had his chance, you know, the shame, Sir Lyndon Pinlan, he did it. And then former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Minnis did it to Ingram. You understand? Now they're trying to do it to Michael Pintard. You understand? So if you watch the footage, you'd see, you know, this is a dispute. You could see something happened earlier, probably through the week or some type of shooting incident. You could see a young man was to the back of a car, and one was on the side, and one was sitting on the wall, and then this car went down the road, you know. And what surprised me about it is that the young man, them see the car going down the road, you know, and they didn't know if they'd want to run or stay there, like they, because they had a gun, because you could see in the footage, one of the guys who got killed, he had a gun. And that's why I say gun can't even save you. You see, he had his gun. He saw the car coming by. The car came down the, went down the one way. Three guys there looking at the car going down the one way. They were standing on the side of a car. And the car reversed back. And one of the guys who was an intended target, you could see where he reached in his waist, and he started to crank his gun. And the car came back. When the car came back, they watched the car pass them. And when the car reached the end part, you know, two guys jumped out, shoot the guy in the blue. I don't know why he keeps standing there. He saw the car, went up the road. I guess he feel that because his friend had a gun, that was going to save him. But those guys that do gun, and their adrenaline was running. You understand? Because when they pull up, they come with intention to kill. And when they jump out the car, you could see where they shoot the guy who watched them went up the road and come back. He got shot. He dropped down dead. The one who had the gun, he panicked with his gun, tried to get away, turned around, he fired a shot. Him and one of the gunmen was exchanging shot. He get off one more shot. He probably shot that guy. And then he got shot. He dropped on the gun, dropped on the ground. Guy pumped six or seven shots in him. Take his gun off the ground. And then they fled. But you could see in the footage, the one who got killed, he also shot one of the guys who came to shoot him. you know, and his gun got taken on the ground. So gun can't even save you. You understand? And that's why the police, you know, would be so aggressive in the inner city community because of these violent acts. So now when the police are seeing all this, and they leave out the headquarters to go in these communities where we're having these type of violent crime, where we're having 100 plus murders. You understand? Innocent or guilty now in these communities. The police don't know who is who. You understand? Hot area. So when they come through, they're going to treat everybody the same because they don't know who's toting gun from who ain't toting gun. And then, you know, the police themselves, you know, come from these impoverished communities and they themselves need training. So when they come around, they ain't playing. So all I can say is this. This is going to continue. We're going to have many people, you know, be acquitted of justifiable killing. The police would always get away with justifiable killing. Because in this case, with Adley, this is not justifiable because their excuse is that he made a move for the police officer gun. But the fact of the matter is, this man was no threat to nobody. This man was his own space. But it's hard to bring convictions against the Royal Bahamas Police Force because they are protected by the politicians and they are protected by a system. So it's hard for us to get justice, you know, because even though we're in the Bahamas, we have systems that are maternity and many people are protected. The system protects them. Some things we can change. The most we could do is advocate for it. And that's why I used to show the advocate and just to let them know that we know what's going on. And I hope that many of you are listening there. Some of you are advocate too, you know, for these things that have happened in our country because this can happen to any one of us in the country. And then they're going to use the excuse us to say, you know what, when they can't find a gun, when they can't find no drugs, you know what the excuse is? He was in a dark, vegan lot. And that's the excuse to take a young man's life, even though he made a move, so-called move for the police officer, firearm. And there could be many reasons for that too. Because many police are not professionals when they approach a citizen. They could be saying things like, get the F or the car. You don't hear me speaking to you? You know, and you could be a poison going through your own emotional problems, you know? Like I said, you could be having your girlfriend problem and she just leave you, you catch a cheating or all kind of stuff going on. And you just want a peace of mind. And that could agitate that officer. For him, he had to have a reason for him to go and charge at the police. Because they say everything was all right. They shined a light. They told him to come to God and he gave them his identification. But that ain't all what happened. There's something happened in between that agitated this man. Even though he was done going through his emotion, there was something that agitated him. That could probably be the police officer saying things to him like, get the old car. And you, who ain't breaking the law, this officer has no jurisdiction over you. So you in your mind saying, I ain't doing nothing wrong. Why this officer saying these things to me? So your defense mechanism could start to take effect because you are a law-abiding citizen. You're doing nothing illegal. So this police should have no jurisdiction over you. So yeah, like I say, your defense mechanism is going to kick in and you're going to start asking questions. And if the police keep on agitating you, it happened to me over and over. You understand? And in that case, that could be it also. We're going to take this one call. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside Inner City on Garden Radio.
That's a nice cozy.
Good night to you.
I may make a little run, but, you know, for my reach back in the show, everybody's listening. You know, you say you're fighting a losing battle, but it's really just the lack of civil disobedience that is causing them to run away with us like that. It's like we're being kidnapped. So when I heard the story, right, you know, of course we have nothing against the police, but when I heard the story, intuition kicked in. But really and truly, I was hoping the coroner's inquest would have been audacious enough to give some comfort to the Bahamian people, especially to those guys in the inner city who see it all, right, but don't say it all, right or wrong. I'm telling you.
Yes, sir.
We make disclosures, that's it. They wouldn't even see us the next day. But the thing is, What I'm saying is with that they said that he made a lunge for the gun. So all the shit is as documented in the video footage, and then it was seen in the video footage that he made an attempt for the officer's gun. But I like how you painted the picture. You know, he was unarmed. He was. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. So he's innocent. He was innocent citizen.
Yeah, and we see a lot of guys going out of their minds in the city, right?
Scrooge? Yes, a lot.
So, Scrooge, hey. According to what you have seen and what I've seen, you really think we can say it on the radio?
Say what?
I don't know what we have seen in the city. You know, you disclose some things, but
yeah,
you know.
That's why I applaud Garden for allowing me to have this kind of conversation.
Yeah, but this is a very integral show, you know.
Yes, I know. So,
but see,
go ahead.
Like, personal experience, I remember Chesapeake Road. I remember I was accused of something. I didn't say what it was, but it was a serious crime. And it was two different set of crime, and so they picked me up. You know, my whole family had to come and say I was home at the time, but somebody who used to be with certain people, and so one or two of them used to be around 9-0. So they, like, had the poison looked similar to me, but I know it wasn't me, but he was a little bit hairy in me and a little bit brighter than me, and way. And, but I don't know how I got caught up in it, just two friends or whatever, right? But fella put me on an ID parade with 9 other tall, dark guys, and I used to bright one, and I used to play ball, so one of my teeth was hanging at the time before I got it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were the similarities and distinctive. So they just put this person up. I wouldn't say who it was, but it's a good thing I know the person, because it's a famous person. And he had the ability to send people to do things. And so I was like, why would they do that? And the person walked right in the ID parade and point and say, it's me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Satan, I wouldn't say who the officers were, but they know they had concocted it. Whether they had something against the old man or what. But this happened. And so as the guy identified me, I started a piece of cussing. Straight to, you know, the little buses pick up and carry up by CID and then carry the JWS. I say, what? I couldn't believe it. You know how that felt, Scoozy? You see, most people don't know how that feels, you know.
Mm.
You understand me? I said I was identified, and I know it was in me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, and then the police officer who charged the situation, he talked about his sons away in school doing this and that, and I said, boy, on a day like it, you ain't get me. I mean, I don't understand that.
Mm.
And my people had to come up there, and I had my, you know, like, alibis and all this, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think if you happen to be living by yourself, impoverished, no means of legal, just recourse or whatever? You see what I'm saying? Just like, oh, be looking for cameras to really be the order of the day. They have cameras everywhere, here, there, everywhere, but we can't get it here. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
And so judging from what you and I have seen, and judging from what has happened to me, right, it's really, there's no winning battle, man. I mean, just the cameras alone could document even what I've accused them of as happening to me, you know. And some officers would stop officers, and they would be, but, you know, the things that I've seen really leaves little to be desired, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's really frightening, man. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And these people talking and talking. You're looking at all the message. This place, this country. See, people say, well, you know, not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But people who understand the mess this country's in.
Not
they live
seriously.
In ivory towers, and wherever they live, I don't know. They don't throw stones, but everybody turns a blind eye to everything. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and then they expect for the country to run along. Like, let me give you an example. We saw the footage of the shooting in Yalla Yalla, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I'm an elderly guy, so those cats, they power go up in the grove, right? Right, you know what I mean? They power and they uncle them and think whatever, right? And some of them moved to the States, but, you know, they're young cats. And so you saw the guy with the gun. Maybe he knew he would, you know, see, he have a gun, so that means he know what he's doing.
Yep.
But he let his friend, who probably is working a normal job, come there like a fool. Like, you see the fella stand up on the road.
You see,
you know, back in the days, see what happened is with me. All he had to do was walk off or go in one of them yards.
And he'd have been living.
If that was me, but
and he would have been living.
The car, he'd have been behind the other car.
You, hold
up. What I'm saying is, why get yourself
why is he's about, no, I'm going to say something 52. 50.
Yeah.
Didn't he see the car? He see the car and he looks straight at them guys. He knows them guys. Why did he stand up there like you say? Go ahead.
Yeah, but listen to me. The guys in the car are smart too, you know. See, the guys, the young guys, no, nobody's dumb when they're into something.
Mm-hmm.
Once you live in a certain world and you think about something enough,
you'll
be ahead of the person that's not in that world. So what they did was, they pulled the car. They even though the guys was conscious that they was through the corner, what they did was they played like they was into them.
Right.
You see how far the car passed before they hop out?
And you
so
see
the guy started to drop their gun.
You want to see the one with the gun? The one who dropped his gun on the side of the car fixing his gun right there?
The one in the red pants?
I think that's the one in the red pants.
No, I tell my boy, I say, look, he had a gun.
He had a gun. He had a gun.
No,
sure. No, the one in the white shirt. When you see him going in the pants, when he's behind it.
Yeah, but he's a fool.
You don't see?
He's supposed to move away.
Right.
Because he's got a gun.
Right.
You know, you ain't wearing no vest.
Right,
you know,
right. You don't see?
You have to understand, Scoozy. You and I were young, you know.
Yes, sir.
The psyche.
Yeah.
Of a young fool with a weapon in his hand.
I been like that.
Yeah, you know the psych.
Yeah.
You know, the dumb psych. We call it the dumb psych. Now we can look back at it. So, you know,
they
pull over one of my friends the other day, and you know, I wear the dreadlocks. So, everybody say he suspect with drugs and firearms. But my friend, the little young Haitian baby fellow, all tattoo up and all that. But he's a decent fellow, but he has a little business, but he was moving. He has his daughter in the Jeep, so everything was normal. But I was surprised they come up with all the big guns, et cetera, et cetera. So, I was saying, big man. So, the little Haitian baby Reginald said, man, leave this man. This man almost 60, man. I said, but, you know, he looks so young for my age, right? I say, officer, I say, use drugs and firearms. I say, I never get locked up with drugs and I never get locked up with firearms. I said, get with three grams of weed, must be 30 years ago. I said, but with drugs and with firearms. I said, you think I can wait till I'm 60 to ride around with drugs and firearms? Mm-hmm. But he, too, he see dreadlocks. He associate these things with, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, discriminating.
I'm a bridge and a tattoo up. So this is, I mean, you know, don't profile me because I don't have time for the dumb foolishness, but I just saying automatically, even when I go in the bank, you know, I didn't always wear locks. People see you and you yuck out a wad of cash and you make it. I run a business. So they automatically think, and even in the business places that you go, listen, people automatically think. They associate, they never see you when you was bald head, but they associate you with this nefarious type, even when they hop out to go in business places. Them. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm feeling what it is to be a Rastaman. You understand what I'm saying? The disdain, the contempt with which people look at you. But I'm the same person. Probably better off, you know what I mean? And you know what we're going through in the city, man. Keep it up, Scoozy.
Thanks a lot,
I think we got to keep our mouth shut. But listen to me. I can send you a song. I want you to play on the radio. The song named License to Kill is a dub poet by Linton Kwesi Johnson. All right?
Kwesi Johnson?
Linton Kwesi Johnson, known as LKJ.
Yeah,
License
yeah.
to Kill.
Okay.
That's what the Bemidji people need to hear. Who gives the license to kill, man? All right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks very lot. Thanks a lot, man. 52 is no outstanding job. And no, for those who are listening, like I say, you know, I have discussions that no one else is going to talk about on radio because they have the vast experience. And like I said, I was given this opportunity by Guardian because they wanted to know about the inside the inner city community. But they didn't also know that I had a vast experience in politics and religion. And I have had a vast experience of dealing with some of the most important people in this country. Some of the many laws that now are on the books in this country in the last 20 years have actually helped manifest a lot of those laws. Some of the laws that many of you are benefiting from now, some of the programs that you see are going on in the country, I've assisted with my input as a citizen of the Commonwealth of Lubumbashi freely over the last few years. So I'm just happy that Guardian Radio allowed me to have a voice to talk about inside the industry, to talk about what is happening in our country and bring it to light so that we can make headway of finding what the problem is, how to solve it, and have a conversation about it, and a dialogue like we're having now. And like I said, you know, we have a long way to go. You know, the police are our friends, and we need the police, but what we are doing to one another, our citizen, you know, God ain't happy with us. You know, I'm gonna leave on this. Think about this. We in a land where 90% of the people are indigenous to the country, okay? We have 10% who are native also, are Caucasian, but they are Bahamian also living here. But we are the majority here. And we fought for our independence, so-called independence. That's why I say so-called independence. Until we get independence means, you know, means that poverty has to be eradicated, prison population has to go down, crime, murder rate has to go down, and sexual abuse, sexual assault, you know, has to go down in the country. Think about this. We had an opportunity where we say we got rid of the British. We inherit their system. And we wanted those positions, the highest position in the land. And we got those positions. But yet still, we have left so many people behind. What you think God is going to tell us? The leaders. You leaders.
you political leaders, you religious leaders, and some of you community leaders, and some of you neighbors, and some of you people, you know, because it goes from top to the bottom. And you had an opportunity to make the Bahamas the best place in the world. And you failed because of stupidity and greed and selfishness and jealousy and hatred for your own. And you say, we fight against the British. Now the British is gone. We still have their system here. And they're letting us govern our land. And yet still, we can't keep Nassau clean. Huh? Think about that. Huh? We can't stop young men them from shooting and killing one another. We can't bring unemployment down to where there's zero unemployment when we have a vast, vast tourism industry where unemployment ain't even supposed to exist in the Bahamian mines, or poverty ain't even supposed to exist in this country. And that falls on the leaders. PLP and F and M. The same thing what Arthur Lyndon Pinland probably did to Perry Gladstone Christie or to Hubert Ingraham. And in turn, they did it back to one another. And then pass on to the next one. That's us. That's us. And God will show all of you people who had power that this is what you can do. Poverty didn't even have to exist in the country. If you just did. Instead of you running y'all, buying a cone up to 50 or 100 million. Father say, you know, if you could have steal, you know. But you didn't need the whole 100 million. Look, if you just to give a little 5 million here, and that little boy there and that little girl there, you help become someone important in life. Look what they contribute to other people. That's you. That's you giving a little $2, $3 million and that them kids who help was able to help other kids and they were able to help other kids. That's you. The father would be happy for you, but you won't keep everything. That's what you're all doing between these two parties. And you're leaving a lot of people behind. And I'm speaking on behalf of the people of the country. You understand? That's how serious it is. And you leaders, one day you're going to be judged. And people might say there's no God. Well, I personally know there's a God. I know there's a Savior. I know his name Yahshua. The Europeans call him Jesus. Not the one who, the Pope grandson. I talk about the one with the Rasta locks, who they call Yahshua. That's the one I believe in. I believe in the Father. You understand? And I believe that, you know, he wants us to help one another to become successful. And in this country, in this 21x7, 700 islands, 700 keys, 52 talk about all the problems we have. Do you think we're supposed to have all these problems in this country? We have more problems than the United States of America. And they get millions of people. We're in a country, one of the smallest countries and smallest population in the world. And we have a problem with the prison. We have a problem with the politics. We have a problem with the police. We have a problem with the citizen. We have problems with internal fighting in the political parties. And we can't get nothing right. And we're moving at a slow pace. Even if we get something right, we're moving at a slow pace. And we're always going backwards. Backwards and forward with programs. It's crazy. So, you know, time is completely run out. I just hope you enjoyed the show. And like I said, I just come here to talk about things that most people would never talk about on radio. I'm glad I had a hard life where I was involved with the police, being a criminal myself, being a part of political parties, knowing the top set of religious leaders,
And I was able to combine all those experience to be able to come here and talk about these matters that are being affecting us. And like I said, the police would always be aggressive to our young man and to us as citizens in the country, because with 100 murders per year and without bringing that statistic down, the police are always going to be in a situation where even when you're right as a citizen, like in Mr. Adi's case, the police could be justifiable and rule that, you know, it was right for the officers to take his life. But listening to the report, that don't give them the right to take his life. And that is not justifiable. But it's hard to beat the system. And y'all go look, y'all read in the newspaper and y'all see. You'd see he had no firearm. You'd see he had no drugs. You would see that was his car. They said he was in a vacant lot in the dark, and the police used their suspicion. And remember, this man was not wanted. There was no probable cause for the officers in the first place to approach him. And if they did, they were supposed to approach him in a manner may he's respected. Good night, sir. Can I have a word with you? Why are you here in this car? And then he can give his. And then if you were the officer and you go there and he was unresponsive to you, then you call in to your superior and you request backup. And then you could pull your service revolver from afar and hold him at a distance. And then if he lunge at you, now, I know the police don't shoot the injured, they shoot the kill. But you would have to shoot the injured in the case where this man is not wanted. You could see this man is mentally ill. So you can shoot him in his kneecap to disable him. You understand? In this case, you see, because you're standing from a distance. So to me, that is not justifiable. That's just an excuse where we can let these officers go back because they're protected by the ground and we all be humans here. But they send a sour message. You understand? And this is what they could come up with. Even though you can clearly see that this was an unjustifiable killing. Unjustifiable, I'm calling it. Not justifiable. They still rule it justifiable. Based on all the details in the newspaper and in the coroner's report. Because he launched at the gun. Innocent man, in his own car, no probable cause. And you probably could agitate the man. Why is he sitting on that car? But we don't want to sue the officers because they are protected. And this is what the citizen of this country going to understand who pay their taxes. Police, the politicians, they are protected from a maternity of brothers to keep the system going and to keep us divided, even though we're brothers and sisters. So that's why police officers be aggressive to a citizen, because when he inherit that system, he has power and he forget that the person he put in over is his brother and sister. As long as that individual you put in over is not being disrespectful to you, you're supposed to be a very respectful police officer. And last police, I'm going on this. I truly believe that this. I know that everyone is in politics and we're drawing the police force, defense force. I know one thing. I don't think a pastor or any man who take an oath, and when I mean take the oath, when you get in parliament, or when you come a police officer, and you come a defense officers, the Bible tells you that you can't serve two masters. But I noticed that they don't know, people don't know how serious this is. Taking an oath, when you take that Bible, and you're a prime minister, and then you swear to serve the king for
First, you serve the queen, and then you serve the king. Do you know that you can't serve two masters? And maybe when we do that, probably we sell our soul to the devil. It's in the music business. It's anywhere where you go and you give a contract and you give your word to a contract to serve a human being. That's why they say you should not bow down to no man. So people who bow down to the Pope, hey, all of y'all are disrespecting the Father. You understand? I hope you understand that doubt. You can't serve two masters. You can either serve God or you can serve man. And if you're serving man, and if you listen to the book, it tells you that Christ was in the wilderness, I think for 30 days and 30 nights, and he was tempted by Satan, who was his brother, right? And he said, and he showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all the banks of the world. And he said, I would put you in charge and give you all this. And that was Satan telling Yahshua that if he deny his father and he bow down to him and worship him, he would give him the kingdoms of the world. So we might not know this, but Satan himself rules the world. We just have to make a conscious effort not to fall in his trap and serve the Father. And that means the least amongst you. Serving the Father means what he requires you to do. Requires you to do is to help the least amongst you. Because if you say if you help them, you're helping him. Okay? So remember that. I think that when they swear, you can't serve two masters, and I think many of our leaders, that when they swear, you know, they swear to a man, a demigod, and then our people who are in the Roman Catholic Church and the churches like that, they serve the Pope because they signed contract with the Rome. So like I say, it's only in the Bible. So I just want to close and say that, and I just want to say good night to each and every one of you. And I hope you enjoyed the show on Guardian Radio 96.9. And I'll see you next week on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I know we be talking about some real stuff, but it's the truth. So we'll see you next week. Godspell life. La, 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 la. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.